Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I'm so jazzed to be in the studio, and we're going to have a great conversation around building enclosures. And I love it when we're practicing what we preach, and literally, he is here looking at a building enclosure here in Colorado, and shout out to Genesis Architects Engineering and Construction, where they have reached out to us and they scheduled around his trip on a specific project to then talk about and go work on the business a little bit and talk his story. And what we're going to do, the main message for you, Tribe, is that the building enclosure is so critical to the success of a project. And I raise my hand as owning a window and door company. It is overlooked so often at the beginning of the project. And these components are often installed incorrectly, which creates problems in the future, which I think he's actually here today to deal with this exact very thing. So, Tribe, at the end of the day, if you have to remove all this work that's been done, it is a ton of effort, which increases so many scheduling conflicts and so many challenges of how do you peel back the onion after the onion has all been covered up and it hasn't been done right. So how this is going to benefit you is that all of us building owners and people that are master facilitators of the building owners, we need to put awareness to the enclosure components and talk about air and water control layers. So we need to understand what systems these facilities employ around that. And so architects and contractors need knowledge of the enclosure components and how they are intended to interact or connect with each other. We're always talking about these connected kit of parts, digitally, physically, all coming together. So during construction, contractors need to employ a QA/QC program to ensure correct installation of enclosure layers. So we get to have a building enclosure specialist in here today and has the knowledge, and he wants to educate you, Tribe, and what we do for opportunities to move this thing forward. And so my perspective at the end of the day, Tribe, is that building enclosure investigation and valuations are challenging but so critical to understand, and how can we make building envelopes better? So I'm so stoked to be in person here with Alan Halan, who is the Director of Architecture Technology at Genesis Architects out of Philadelphia, and he's here with me in studio in Denver. Alan, I'm so excited to have you. Thank you for making time to be here. Let's get into this and get to know you about your favorite beverage and have as much fun as possible. What do you say?
All right. Thank you for having me. This sounds great. All right. So go ahead and hit me with your question.
All right. Well, what's your favorite beverage, Alan?
All right. I'm like Ron Burgundy. I love a good scotch. Macallan 12 year is my scotch of choice.
I love the Ron Burgundy. There's times when I have been reading the teleprompter and my team jokes about he went Ron Burgundy on us. So there's a good tee up, right? Like
I love lamp, right? And I love scotch.
What is a favorite place you've traveled?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to go with Cairo, Egypt. What a fantastic city. Just wonderful, wonderful architecture out there. You know, the pyramids, of Giza. I got to go inside of a pyramid, ride a camel, you know, hang out on the Nile. It was amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool stuff. Well, what do you like to do outside of the construction silos we're going to talk around about building envelopes today that we passionately call the art of construction?
This is my hobby. No, I'm kidding. I do have a passion for this. I love this. I read a lot about this stuff. I read a lot in general. Anything that take me away from being in my own head. But really, the simple answer is camping, going out to nature, you know, getting that natural connection with nature again is always good. Disconnecting, not having a cell phone ring. That's what we like to do.
Ooh, sounds like we need to get you to our retreat center here. We're in the Master Facilitators Program once a year. We take, and it's going to be in June this year, where the facilitators meet up, and it's that very thing where you just get out and work on the business in the nature, and it's in the base of the Santa Cristo Mountain Range. It's just a beautiful spot that we go out to once a year.
So,
yeah, we'll talk more about that, and if anybody's interested at the end, we'll talk more about the Master Facilitators Program. That's really truly passionate about me, that that's what we've been working so hard to build this thing out of, like, first who and then what. Now we're really building this whole tribe and coming together. But first, let's go back. This podcast is all about you and in your platform. What is your story that led you to being the director of architectural technology at Genesis Architects?
Oh my gosh, well, how much time do we have? I mean, I have a flight to catch later, but this story goes back quite a bit. Interestingly enough, I've been doing the building enclosure thing for about 10 years, but my first job while I was in college actually was for, I interned for an architect who is our AE executive operations principal. And I've worked for the president of architecture as well. And so I developed these relationships back when I was about 19. Fast forward, going through graduate school, and I'm in graduate school. It's about 2008. The recession hits, and you know, I'm going through my graduate studies. I come across an article where I hear, I'm sorry, I don't hear that, but I read that an architect hits their stride at 65, and I thought that that was ridiculous. Why am I going to hit my stride at 65 mm-hmm. when my peers are retiring? So I started to kind of think about the daily life of an architect and kind of my own experiences up to that point. And at that time, I was a design architect, and I was working on a lot of different proposals and a lot of different, you know, building presentations, but not a lot of this stuff got built. And so I started to look and try to get myself into more opportunities to be on site. You know, again, the recession hits, I get laid off, and I go full time to school. I start a consulting company. I land a job outside of the U.S. and I come back to the U.S. and all of a sudden my wife says, all right, I hope you got that entrepreneurial, you know, experience out. You need a job. Let's go get yourself a job. Again, the passion to be on site, the jobs that I was looking for were project manager at a construction management firm. Not really looking at traditional architecture jobs because, again, I wanted to get out there to be on site and really learn how the components are going together, understand the hardships that contractors have. And as I mentioned, I was out of the country for a year. I was basically on a construction site for a solid year in the island of the Galapagos. I worked on the airport for Baltra Island. And that was just a tremendous experience. So coming back to the States, I really wanted to get that feeling. I took a job working for an envelope consulting firm where we did a lot of standardized water testing. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of diagnostics, a lot of leak investigation. And I just got into the business. I fell in love with putting buildings together and taking them apart and fixing them. I mean, that was fantastic. That led to another opportunity in which I started to work on the multifamily residential side, doing construction defect and litigation support. Then I was being heavily recruited by a national developer, and I was about three interviews in, and they asked me to get some recommendations, which I did, and I called the people that I'd worked with 20 years ago, and they said no to the recommendation, followed quickly by some laughter, and said, yes, we'll give you a recommendation, but why don't you come in and talk to us? I said, okay. You know, it never hurts to talk to anybody. And, you know, close to 4 years later, you know, they offered me, or I'm sorry, close to 4 years later now, I'm a director of architectural technology here. You know, that's the what they offered me. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse, you know, to work with people that I had worked with 20 years ago, that I had a good relationship with, that I respected. So that's what led me to be the director of architectural technology at Genesis.
Thank you for sharing that story. And I've been in this business, you know, 25-ish years, kind of similar. It sounds like you and I have been around doing this similar. And the part I want to pause and try, listen to what he just said, is like how small this industry is to be very careful about burning bridges, right?
Oh,
and
correct.
Always building bridges because construction is messy, but what comes around goes around. And that's really that story that I think you just shared with us.
Yeah, relationships are huge. You know, I love talking to people. I love having a conversation with people because I think in every conversation, you get something out of somebody. And, you know, I wasn't looking to be an enclosure specialist. You know, it's not like when I was five, I said, I want to be an architect, not an enclosure specialist. You know, when I went to college, I said, I want to be a design architect, not an enclosure specialist. I didn't even know what this was. But in having conversations with different people, you know, you always take a little nugget away from it. And what turned me on to the enclosure was one, the passion that I was really
solving a problem. But I had a conversation at my nephew's one-year-old birthday party where my brother-in-law's boss, you know, told me about his experiences from college and, you know, as a young professional, telling me that he only took problem jobs. And he was in IT. He said he took every job that had a problem on that nobody wanted. And he said, the reason I did this is because if you understand the problems, you know how to fix them, then you always have a solution for them. You know, you're able to adapt, you're able to change. And that's what you need in construction, is have that out of the box thinking and the ability to adapt to any condition that you know is encountered.
I absolutely love it. Take a minute and talk with us about what is Genesis all about, who is who you represent, and you know, teed this up for us to be here with you today. What is Genesis all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Genesis is a firm. We're Genesis AEC is our name, and you know, the AEC stands for Architecture, Engineering, and Constructors. And you know, we have all the professionals in house. I think we do. It would be easier for me to tell you what we don't do than what we do do. So the you know, our architecture department, we have architectures and interiors. We can do things like lab design, you know, data facilities, interiors, lobbies, cafeterias, offices. You know, we have process architecture. We have building enclosure. So that's what I do. I run the building enclosure studio, and I'm a resource to the architecture team, the engineers, and also the construction management group that we have. So that's my role there. I do want to get in when we talk about engineering. We have, you know, process engineering, we have utilities, mechanical, plumbing, fire protection. We have commissioning. We have builders on. We also have an asset management group for, you know, equipment and the coordination of equipment. I'm telling you, the list goes on and on, Dem, and I just can't stop talking about it. But let's go back and talk a little bit about my enclosure studio and what we do. So we are a resource for the company, and we, you know, help the company when it comes to construction matters and constructability for architects and things like that. But we also have our own projects. We do commissioning work. That's why I'm here down here in Colorado Springs or Denver now in your studio. But we're doing a resealing of a curtain wall system, where we're the commissioning agent. So we do commissioning work. We also do re-roofing jobs. Our studio will do, if you have a glazing system that needs to get, you know, evaluated, we can do that as well. We do leak investigation, forensics, and pretty much assessments for different components or even a property condition assessment.
Windows leak?
Yeah.
I just throwing you off there.
So somebody told me that there are two types of windows. Windows that leak and windows that will leak.
Yeah.
Right?
So let's talk about what are some of the most common problems that you find with building enclosures?
Oh, they all relate to water. They pretty much all relate to water in one way or another. Whether that's water vapor, condensation, or bulk water, they all come from water.
Getting water where you want it to go, and sometimes it finds a path where you don't want it to go, and then you have to unwind that, right?
Correct. So you can't stop water. You can only manage it, and that's one of the things that we always have to remember, you know, keep in the back of our mind.
It sounds so obvious when you say it,
correct,
but yet I think in construction, a lot of times it's like, okay, the dam is built and then water will never go past that.
Right.
Well, it may not go past that, but it probably will go around it, and how does it go around that?
Right.
So describe one of your more complex building evaluations that you've ever had to perform. What was the problem and what did you end up doing to help resolve that?
This is a great question because the answer to me is right there, right in my head. And to me, there's only one building that comes into mind. It's a building in Philadelphia. It's a building I worked on, you know, through my last employer. And it was a multifamily building leaking everywhere. It was a poorly built building. And really what the problem there is going to be is installation, all installation. I don't want to point fingers, and that's where I'm getting a little, it's always a little hard here, but this one, the problem really was, it was installation, but also design. I mean, mm-hmm. There were some bad details on this building that you would think, oh, they can't possibly build
that. Every construction project has that issue you're talking about, and that's connecting the digital build to the physical build, connecting the field to the office of intersecting those different, the intent and the execution, right?
Correct. But there were some omissions within the design detail. So that was problematic. But every time it rains in Philadelphia, I think of this building and I think of all those residents, and they were just wonderful people. But you know, they have a problem. When I was there on site, we ended up deconstructing two corners of the building, you know, 3 to 4 stories, taking the brick off and reinstalling the water resistive barrier. And that was a big job. I mean, you know, water was coming in through a lot of different places, just completely rotting out the inside of people's homes.
Yeah, and that picture you paint is a scary one, right? And that's why we want to talk about this. So let's back up and talk about what leads to some of the biggest problems you find on buildings. And are there certain types of education that you don't think that people in the field have enough of around that?
Yeah, so I think the problems kind of stem, you know, we keep talking about installation, but it's the people that are installing the components. Not necessarily their bosses. I think their bosses know what's going on, but the actual people swinging the hammers, the crews in there, sometimes I think they don't really understand what the point of a lot of these layers are. And when you talk to them and you explain to them the point, you know, I get a different result. That's what I do. So whenever there is a crew and I see that something's going wrong, I'll let them know. So for example, about 3 months ago, I was in Kentucky at a job. And they were installing the base flashing for this brick cavity CMU wall. The termination bar was installed incorrectly. It was upside down. And the point of the termination bar, it has to be installed one way. It's to keep, you know, the flashing and that water mastic in constant compression. But it's installed in a certain way to also create a caulk shelf. They installed it backwards where they could not install a caulk shelf. And it was about 100 linear feet of this, you know, through wall flashing installed. When I started to talk to the masons, you know, they told me, well, wait a second. This guy told me to install the termination bar this way. I said, where is that guy? Where is that guy? I'm not trying to, you know, prove him wrong or point fingers at him. But right now we have a perfect moment, a perfect opportunity to educate people.
100%.
And so I had the masons there and the CM group is there and they're, They were. I was just explaining to them. I have the benefit of being bilingual, and this crew happened to speak Spanish, which is the language that I'm fluent in, which is also very helpful.
100%.
You know, the contractor looks at me and goes, "Oh my gosh, you speak Spanish? This is great." I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." So I told your crew this is what they're to do, you know, moving forward. So begrudgingly, they had to, you know, probably rip out about 100 linear feet of, you know, base wall flashing, but, you know, we did get that piece to kind of come in. You know, they understand now all the systems, the end dams, the back dams, the termination bars, the mortar net, the weeps. You know, we went through that entire system just explaining to them what's going on. So I think while it is the installation, I don't think that anybody's necessarily a bad person or doing something that they think is wrong and, you know, just trying to be difficult. I just think that there is no awareness. And I think that we kind of get ourselves into the zone where we're just continuing to do the same thing, you know, make that widget, make that cog, swing that hammer. You know, we're always getting into the same thing. And we tend to forget, you know, what is the point of why we're doing this, you know?
Well said. So how do we provide the education on these projects that you evaluate? And how do you think we could improve field education industry-wide around that case study you just explained?
Well, there's a lot of things that we can do. First off, you can certainly call, you know, product manufacturers and their representatives. They love coming out on site. At least in my experience, they love coming out on the site, you know, looking over, you know, that first install, giving those pointers, you know, and then making comments about the work, but then also looking at other conditions and helping, working with the contractor. Because the product manufacturers, they don't want the contractors to fail, because that's, then that comes back on them as a potential warranty claim.
100%.
And I don't want the contractor to fail because if they do, then I'm failing. So, you know, it comes down to having awareness and of the resources that we have here in the industry and taking advantage of them. And I certainly think that engaging and collaborating with a product rep or a building enclosure specialist, because they're going to know the product reps too, because they're going to have that relationship with them because they deal with them a lot. You know, get them out there, get that education, read the installation instructions. You know, a lot of...
Wait, come on.
No, it doesn't happen that much. I mean, it does not happen. And there are installation instructions for everything. And if it doesn't have it, look at the sticker. You know this, right? You go to the Home Depot and you get the cheapest window out there. You know, there's a sticker on there that tells, you know, the installer to go to ASTM E2112, you know, the standard guide for, you know, window installation. And, you know, I got to ask, it's a boring 80-page document that you can only read at jury duty. Okay. Because you have nowhere to go.
We've made it so complex that nobody does anything at all. They just throw it in. And that's finding this happy medium. So your example of the Philadelphia building, I see that and say, okay, is how it's constructed, all the challenges. So when it comes to restoring these older buildings that have challenges, you know, what do you think we should be doing around that versus just tearing them down? And how do you know when a building has hope or when it doesn't?
Right. So that's a really good question because, you know, first of all, an existing building is the most sustainable building. So whenever we can go ahead and repurpose a building, let's go ahead and do that. You know, that's just going to help, you know, the sustainability, our sustainability goals. It's going to be potentially maybe cheaper because you have a shell of a building. But that's where your follow-up question, how do we know if we should reuse that building? Well, you need to do an assessment. And if you are looking to buy a building, you know, most people tend to get a property condition assessment. If you have a building and you just don't know what to do with it or you got problems with it, you know, a building assessment is something that you probably want to do. Building assessments are going to kind of take a look at everything within the building. Property condition assessments, really, really, really robust. That's going to be architects, engineers, you know, different people coming out to the site, looking at everything from the landscaping to the roof to the structure, all that stuff. A building assessment's a little bit more toned down, and it's going to be a smaller team looking at your exterior, right? The exterior walls, where is water potentially coming in? How does the roof look? When should you think about replacing your roof? And basically little maintenance tips. Okay, your sealant looks cracked and deteriorated. You probably want to reinstall your sealants. But you should also know from that assessment, I mean, what we're trying to do, what anybody's trying to do is really gain knowledge about the building and its enclosure system. Because there's a lot of different enclosure systems. It could be a rain screen. It could be a barrier system, like a curtain wall. It could be a mass storage wall. And each one of these systems is going to handle water differently. And so we need to understand how the building is managing water so we can go ahead and remediate any issues.
100%. And you got to figure out what kit of parts, how is intended. If it was a contain and drain or a barrier system, those type of systems, when you talk about rain screens, I think back of like the EFIS and the different ways over the years of the unintended consequences of different kit of parts. And we've definitely hit on the F word of fear, right? So we've kind of painted the picture. I kind of want to switch gears now as we're always trying to say, let's have as much fun as possible because construction is messy and there's plenty of crusty contractors out there that are just pointing the finger. But let's talk about what is your favorite building restoration project that you've been part of?
Oh man, these are great questions. This one goes back probably about a bit ago, 2008, 2009. I was fortunate enough to work on the Fairmount Waterworks, which is a National Historic Landmark. It is in Philadelphia. It's on the Schuylkill River. It's right behind the Art Museum. And, you know, we talked about how all problems kind of stem from water. The Philadelphia Waterworks had water running through it up until about probably 1909, I think that's when it was decommissioned. But great history here. So Philadelphia was the first city to say that water was the responsibility of the municipality. And so back in the 1800s, Philadelphia had, you know, yellow fever. And so residents were dying. They tied it to the drinking water. Hence why they said, we got to provide the public with fresh drinking water. They create the waterworks, which is a facility that pumps up water up to what was Fairmount, which is now the site of the Art Museum. And that was a big reservoir that fed water to the city of Philadelphia. Here, water in the building was not a problem. The other interesting part about this history is that this is what created Fairmount Park, which is a very large, city, a park system within a city. I think it might be the largest in the U.S. And why they did that was they bought all the land north of the waterworks, because Philadelphia at the time also had a very big textile industry. And so all these mills were up in the Manayunk area and much north of that, and they were spewing bad things into the river. So Philadelphia, understanding this and trying to protect that pollution from entering, again, our drinking water, ended up buying all that land of the river, you know, up the river to, you know, hopefully combat some of that. And that's how Fairmount Park became to be.
What a cool story of all comes back to water in your world and managing that, right?
Right.
And as a guy that owns a window and door company myself, as we're in our Art of Construction studio and inside of our Experience Center here in Denver, Colorado, windows and doors are a big passion for both of us, right? And they're a big part of, it's much easier to have a weatherproof window if it's just a cinder block box, right? But that's not really what people love to be in, right? So
not
you go
all.
Punch a bunch of holes in it, that's where it becomes a big management system.
Absolutely.
So how big of a role do window and door science play in the building enclosure problems?
Of course it's huge. It's very big. I mean, you know, you have an enclosure system and then you're poking holes through it, right? You know, it also, you have an assembly that may be 8 to 12 inches thick, right? And that has a specific R value. And then you're going to now a window that's going to be about an inch thick, right? That has a different R value. So yeah, you have some loss and efficiencies there with windows and openings. But again, you need to have those, right? We need that connection to the outside. We need daylight. We need all those things. Windows and doors, every window and door is going to manage water differently. So just understand how it's managing water. Does it have weeps? You know, be sure never to seal those weeps up. That happens a lot, and a lot more often than most people think. You know, you have a leaky window. You call somebody to come ahead and fix the window. They see some holes in the front of the window. They seal them up. All they did was seal up more water into your window, and that water's got to go somewhere. So, you know, huge, huge stuff with windows. Absolutely.
So what steps should our industry as a whole take to improve building envelopes?
I think we need to definitely build awareness and understand the resources that we have and just keep talking about it. I think that, you know, there are a lot of organizations out there, you know, AMA, ASTM, ABBA, you know, putting out great resources for contractors, architects, designers, for everyone, even homeowners. There's an organization for everything. Find those organizations, you know, look at all the stuff that they provide, the resources, both in technical bulletins. I think we contractors, we architects, we in the industry need to go and get that knowledge. It's out there. You just got to get it.
So how does this relate to the operational efficiency or sustainability of our buildings?
Well, the tighter your envelope, the less money, less resources you're going to spend, which equates to less money. And that's great. That's great on all accounts, right? You're using less resources, which is good for sustainability, and you're saving money on it.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by all this stuff, and we could talk for days about water management, but I think we've done some really good, you know, pointing out the reality of the situation, right? If you've gave some great experiences of what Genesis has done, what's the best way for people to get a hold of Genesis? We'll put links in the show notes, but I'm assuming website. Where do you put your time for educational awareness on social media?
That's a great question. I used to be more active in Instagram. Right now, I'm focusing internal social media. So we have like an internal social media thing, and that's where I'm posting a lot of videos, a lot of, you know, articles or photographs of the deficiencies that we're seeing, because, you know, we really want to be a teaching firm. And I totally buy that. Education and knowledge is so important. So I want the designers, I want the people building it, I want them to see all the stuff that we're working on. So I don't have a good social media presence, but Genesis absolutely does. And they'll steal a lot of my social media posts that are internal and put them onto LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a great one. I think we're very focused on LinkedIn. We also have an Instagram page as well. It's going to be Genesis AEC. You can, you know, search for that and find us. Our website is going to be genesisaec.com. The people that we tend to work with are our typical client base are going to be people in the pharmaceutical industry, people with or clients as science and technology. Think of, you know, data centers and critical and secure facilities. We deal with a lot of a lot of facilities that do a lot of intense things inside. So they obviously really need a highly controlled environment because they're either making, you know, life curing drugs or, you know, weapons defense, or they might be our mobile providers, you know? So yeah, that's Genesis. That's how you can get a hold of us. And, you know, that's what we're about.
Awesome. So as we get ready to close this thing out, the questions we always ask, I'm fascinated for a guy that's been consulting, and I love the story at the beginning about how the interconnected and working internally to really reach outward through Genesis. What is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to technology and construction?
I'm really excited about liquids and coatings. Some people might argue, hey, the future is now. We have all that stuff. Why aren't you using them? Yeah, we have that stuff. We have that technology. I think that, you know, the industry may be a little bit slower to get to find installers for it. With liquids and coatings and things like that, they're going to be a little bit, I don't want to say harder to install, but they have their nuances, right? With a liquid, is it a two-part liquid? Do you need to mix it? What's the mix rate? You know, do you have the equipment to install this? Do you have the equipment to mix this? So there is going to be maybe a higher upfront cost for something like that. And sometimes contractors may not have that. They may not have the knowledge for that. And as I said before, you want to set up the contractor for success. So for me, the products that I still choose are going to be membranes, because most contractors have that experience. But I think in the next 10 to 15 years, I'm seeing now a lot of contractors actually substitute my membranes for liquids because they're liking them. And they always, you know, it seems like they come in kind of bashful, like, do you think we can do a liquid here? And I'm just like, absolutely. I love a liquid. What, you want a hug or something? I mean, but I
fear of change again, right? Just like that awareness. And I love how you painted that picture, right? Like to niche in there to say, just because we've always done it this way doesn't mean we should continue to do it that way, right? So good on you for that. And as the last question we always ask, what is the one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about as they go out there and crush it to grow their business?
Well, I would say definitely focus on a quality assurance, a quality control program when it comes to the building enclosure layers. That's going to be your roofing. That's going to be your waterproofing. That's going to be your air barriers. Okay. All of these things want to be continuous. Okay. It's an enclosure slash envelope. You know, some people like to say building envelope. I like that analogy because an envelope only works when it's completely sealed and continuous. So definitely for those contractors, you know, establish a quality assurance program. And, you know, your resources are going to be those associations. You know, if you're, you know, ABBA, AMA, ASTM, there's going to be a lot of associations out there that are going to have, you know, guidance for these quality assurance programs. So definitely that. If that's something that might be out of your wheelhouse, talk to a building enclosure consultant. You know, they can help you. Maybe they help you a first couple of times. They teach you the ropes, and then the contractor starts to build their own quality program out of it.
Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for coming here to take a little time while you're working in your business to step out and work on your business and share your story.
Thank you so much. This was absolutely amazing. My first podcast experience ever, and it was great. Thank you so much.
You did a wonderful job. Thanks again.
Thank you.
So to begin with the end in mind, the comment that hit me when he first started this conversation, that hit him when he was getting going in this business, was architects hit their stride at 65. What a painful message to get hit with if you're a lifelong learner, a student of the game. And I think of some of my mentors who are around that age that truly have hit their stride. But then you get tired, right? And if you hear that, if you're saying, I want to be an architect, not a building enclosure specialist, I challenge him in the Art of Construction Master Facilitators, where we have an Ask Me Anything program, to challenge him to come in and talk with us to say, if he could do it all over again, would he just say, I'm going to go be a building enclosure specialist instead of an architect? And I say that because I truly appreciated his story, because he realized a lot of stuff doesn't get built. And we are proud people that want to see the digital environment actually happen, right? And then you have to get hit sideways sometimes, right? He talked about the 2008 getting laid off as we're now going into this supposed next recession. And with every downfall has more opportunities, right? And he did that where he went back to school, became a consultant, and he said it himself. His wife said, enough being a consultant, go get a job, right? And in between, we all got to be lifelong learners. And what I loved about is he went out and wore the boots when he talked about his story at the Galapagos and figured out how to do that, right? But one of the things that really I want to point out is that you have to get outside of your element to move forward. And the story he told about my one-year-old birthday party, to where one of his mentors was says, run to the problem. Because our industry is famous for running around the problem. And the longer you run around or away from the problem, I always say whenever there's a problem, the only way around it is straight effing through it, tribe. And so the whole idea is about this internal network of specialists that he was talking a lot about. And the handoffs. Whenever I hear about building enclosures, I say, okay, who are the characters of the story and how do the handoffs work? Because you have to understand the layers that we call our customer care wheel, because you have to be able to train and transfer that enthusiasm to train the trainer. And his story about the termination bar, that was definitely a good crusty contractor story, right? Because the lab and the caulking shelf is very different in the lab than it is on the job site, right? And so the part that I totally agree with him is that you have to bring the experts to the party, right? But don't bring them to the party in a gotcha moment. Really bring them and have each other's back, because our industry is famous for just trying to CYA and bring them in to just cover their back. And that is the difference between crusty contractor, whatever you want to call the I've always done it this way, to being a master facilitator. And we are always talking about this is for contractors and affiliates to grow their business through a proactive approach. And that's really what I think he was talking about at the end of the day. You're going to have a lot less problems if you actually hit them head on. And as we joked about, to read the instructions that none of us actually take the time to do. But the part that you got to understand that I was fascinated by Alan, and what I've got to know him as a lifelong learner, is he learns how to speak the language of who you're speaking to. And next week, we have our first workshop with Jason Blanker, where it's you got to know who you are, and you got to be able to know who you're talking with to be successful in this business. And so he talked about speaking his language, where he knows how to speak warrior Spanish. And what I mean by that is the people out there doing the work, because a lot of times the people who may have who's executing the vision may not be there on the job site when you're actually trying to put in that termination bar and somebody doesn't know and didn't get educated to put it in upside down. The comment I loved, an existing building is the most sustainable building. And I think we definitely have to think about that, because a lot of times the easiest way through a problem is just to demo the whole thing and just start over, if you don't want to say that's not the most sustainable. So who is responsible for water? I loved his example where he talked about an actual water building in the background of that. At the end of the day, we're all responsible for that, because that's the lifeline of what we're all doing here. So we have to understand how to manage water and who manages what systems, because water has to go somewhere. And so I challenge us all from this conversation. Alan and I are very niched in when it comes to water management, because he's on the building envelope and I run and operate a company that punches holes in those. But we all have to be water trusted advisors. And we have to all run to the problem and get the right amount of help. And when he talked about, good on Genesis on how the story evolved, and I hope they get a lot of good awareness and recognition, rightfully so, from this as a teaching firm. And he talked a lot about how he is one of the trust advisors internally, but then they have a team looking outward. And that's at the end of the day why we had this conversation today. And then we have to always be looking forward. I raise my hand and say liquids and coatings, when we've done them right on our projects, we don't have problems, but we don't use them enough because the people are resistant to change. And what that means is that it's different ways of doing it. You have to have different equipments, and this change is hard, right? And that's why we talk about it. But that is why we launched the Art of Construction Master Facilitators, because we're going to get Alan in there to be one of those people to help really move this thing forward. And at the end of the day, quality components are a must in the gotcha areas. And that's what he kind of talked about, of that building envelope is a good way to talk about it, because you better be involved locally on how it works locally in the municipalities for today and tomorrow, and use the Art of Construction Master Facilitators as a platform nationally. What an honor to be able to talk about that. And I love to outsource inside, just like he talked about with Genesis and the team, because you don't know what you don't know. And boy, you can be jaded by what you think you know, tribe. Crush it out there.